The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. This evening, I want to talk about the topic of resolve. And maybe resolve is a burdensome concept, like you have to work at something. The ancient word for it is adhitana. One person translates it, one book translated it as foundation. The word can mean literally can mean something like, closer to the English words, to take a stand or to stand in something, or a special place to stand. So it's a place where we kind of come out of, take our stand on, or supported by. And part of the value of this resolve, some people translate it as a vow or aspiration, is that to the degree to which Buddhist practice encourages us to let go deeply, or brings us to a place where the ordinary idea of self is not operating so much, or where brings us to a place where we no longer can live with some of the values we've been living with before, some of the orientations or purposes of our life that we had before. It's easy to feel disoriented, it's easy to feel a certain kind of, what's the purpose, or how do I orient myself now? The Buddha said once, you know, nothing whatsoever is worth clinging to. Well, if nothing's worth clinging to, and I've been clinging my whole life to something or other, to be motivated to know what to do, then what do? When I don't cling? Do I just sit at home on the couch? You know, what do I do? And so, in this kind of context, Buddhism offers resolves, aspirations, vows, a certain kind of orientation, a way to live in the world that can guide us, can support us, can be a place to stand, a standing place, a orientation, a foundation for ourselves. And in our early Buddhist tradition, there are four resolves that are taught. And the idea is to stay close to these. These can guide us. These can support us. So when in doubt, live with these resolves. And I think of them as being so important, such a good foundation or place to come from, that if someone asks you, you know, what do you do? I think in modern English, basically they're asking you, what's your work? I think that's what they mean. It's almost synonymous. But I think sometimes in our modern society, career and work is kind of overrated sometimes. Sometimes people's sense of worth comes from the work they do, or their status, or their the appreciation that people think, oh, this person's special is because of the work they do. So someone asks you, what do you do? One answer is you can say, oh, I do these four resolves. I stand in these four resolves. So they're that important that if that might for some people actually be more important than a career or work. That you would, this would be the guiding principles of a life. So there's four resolves. The first is to be resolved on wisdom. The second is to be resolved on truth. The third is to be resolved on letting go or giving up, relinquishing. It's a wonderful word, the Pali word here, because the word can also mean giving or generosity. And the fact that these two, the word for letting go or relinquishing also means to give or be generous, is kind of a fascinating topic. And the fourth resolve is the resolve on peace. So wisdom, truth, letting go, and peace. These are worthwhile places to take a stand or to be oriented. You can ask yourself, as I'm in any situation you're in, how do I relate to this wisely? What's true here? What's really the truth here? What's the significant truth of the moment that I'm overlooking and not noticing because I'm involved in my desires or my fears or my planning for the future? But what's the truth of this moment? What is it that is appropriate to relinquish here, to not hold on to anymore, to let go? And how is this letting go in the moment here a generous thing to do? Not a diminishment of self, not a diminishment of our life, or not impoverishing us in letting go, but something that is generous. And generosity, maybe that comes from a feeling of inner wealth. We have an abundance of wealth. And of course we're happy to let go so other people make space. We're not impoverished. And then where's the peace here? Is there peace in this situation, a peacefulness? Is there a place for that here? Now, these might seem kind of like maybe artificial or strange orientation to have as we go through the life. But when we think about what many people are actually resolved on, maybe sometimes unconsciously, they don't even know they're resolved on things. What people mostly do with their lives and make the center of orientation of their life, these are pretty good resolves to live by. Some people are resolved on greed. Some people are resolved on complaining and hostility and blame. Some people are resolved on fear and anxiety. Some people are resolved on hanging on to the past and memories and ideas. Some people are resolved on fantasies of the future or delusions of grandeur of some kind or other, or resolved on being safe. I like the little quote, the little cliche that says that a boat is safe in a harbor, but that's not what the boat was built for. So, you know, if we spend a lot of time trying to keep ourselves safe, we weren't actually built to be safe, you know, to be always safe. So to be resolved on that, maybe we shortchange ourselves. Some people are resolved on money and wealth, status, power, all kinds of things. Some people are resolved on being loved, being respected. And some of these, of course, are not necessarily wrong to be oriented towards. But if they're the center of the life, maybe we're missing out on something. Maybe we're diminished by those resolves, if that's really what we're all about. These four resolves, I propose, it's different, that if we're resolved on those, they don't necessarily prevent us to do all other kinds of things. They don't replace the things that we might do in our life. But if we take our stand in these four resolves, that will radically change how we do all the things that we do. And maybe some of the ways in which we engage the world are not so healthy for ourselves and for others. And to engage in the world to do these things that we do, but to do it from a different orientation, can be powerful. So these four resolves. So the first resolve is wisdom. And this is to be wise about how we view our situation, to be wise how we approach our situation, wise in what we do and how we understand what we're doing. And just to ask that question, you know, what's the wise thing to do here? What's the wise approach to this? What's the wise way of seeing the situation? And then it's, you know, almost like I can repeat myself, and some of the ways that we view are not particularly wise. If we look through the filter of our greed, ambition, our hostility, our blame, our anxiety, and those aren't really wise ways. It doesn't help us see clearly. It doesn't help us to see how to live usefully in a good way. So are there different ways of seeing, different ways of relating to the situation we're in? Oddly enough, one of the wise ways that Buddhism emphasizes to what we look for, what we study, is to study where the stress is, to study where the dukkha is. It's wise to notice where there's tension, where there's suffering, where there's pain. Not so we can suffer more, but so that we can, it's wise to understand that it's happening, that it's there, so that we can be with it in a different way. Part of wisdom is to be with what's challenging, with the stresses of the situation, in order to understand it better, to understand particularly our contributions to it. What are we doing that contributes to the way we feel uncomfortable or stressed or afraid or upset or whatever it might be? And to it's wise to study this, wise to look at this, to understand it. And if there is ways that we contribute to our own stress, then maybe we can let go of it if we know what it is. But if we ignore the suffering we have, the stress we have, the tension we have, and we ignore then our contribution to it, then there's no way of knowing what we can do personally to make the situation better. One of the ways that's not wise is to spend a lot of time blaming others, being resentful or complaining about others. I'm sure there are people who are definitely appropriate to, I don't know, blame for things that happen in the world. But if we're resolved always on blaming other people and never look at ourselves, we once again limit our lives. We narrow our lives. And this movement of looking in ourselves wisely and where our suffering is, where our tension and grasping and clinging is, and letting go of it, is actually a movement that opens us up. That there's the opposite of limiting ourselves. It kind of creates more an unlimited way of being in the world. And so to be resolved on wisdom, and this is one of what I just described today was in the core forms of Buddhist wisdom, to be wise about our suffering, or truth, to be wise about what's true, to know the truth, to ask what is true here. And of course, there's many things you can say is true. You know, so someone asked me, you know, what's true in the moment here? I can say, well, there's a blue tape, but on the floor that's crooked. And, you know, that's not the kind of truth that will set you free. Unless you're a Zen master, they can say things like that. But it's not going to go that far. But, you know, if I'm sitting here, what's true might be that I appreciate sitting here with you. I value that you came here today, and I take your interest in the Dharma seriously, and I feel like I would like to offer something to you that respects your interest in coming here. That's true. If that has a different feeling to recognize that than to recognize that someone put the tape down crooked. It's okay for me to say it because I was the one who did it. And and I suppose what's true as well is that I have a teeny bit of apprehension, nervousness, maybe a little bit, that here we are back in person again and teaching in person, and am I offering something that's useful for you and helpful and worthwhile your time to come here? And so I don't know how useful that truth is, but I recognize it, that that's also here. And so rather than having that concern be something that, you know, eats at me or bothers me or inhibits me, or, you know, I just recognize it's there, it's true. And knowing it's true, then it's like, okay, you know, it can accompany me. It's not going to interfere with what I do here. I'm not caught up in it and concerned. So I don't know if those are good examples, but the idea is to recognize that what's true, what's really true here, what's true that has to do with our suffering, what's true about our freedom, what's true about our appreciation of things, the love of the moment, what's the truth that brings this moment that we're here into a kind of fullness, into a life, into a place where we can meet other people and be connected and feel grounded and feel like it's wonderful to be alive. Is there a truth that would provide that for us? What if there is? Isn't it kind of sad not to stop and notice it and recognize it? So discover what is true. And part of what the Buddhist tradition emphasizes as important is to recognize the truth of where we're grasping, where we're clinging, what we're clinging to, what we're resisting. Because that, if we recognize the truth of that, then there's hope to release it, to look through it to the other side. But if we don't see the truth of that, then we can't do that work. Or sometimes it's the opposite that we can see as the truth. We can see the truth of our freedom, the truth of our vitality and connectedness to ourselves, to others, to the world, that comes when we're not caught in the grip of clinging or resistance or preoccupation. And to recognize that truth and to live it and connect to people and be present. And then this truth of relinquishment, letting go. If I use the word giving up, it might be kind of depressing. There are all kinds of relationship connotations, but it has the word giving in it. And the word chaga, the C-A-G-A, the word for relinquishment, also means generosity, giving. And you find that in Buddhism, the Buddhist languages, all these words that have this double meaning, generosity or giving, and then letting go. And we find that in English, the word giving up apparently originally it was related to the word, the expression to offer something up on the altar, like some sacred thing. And So I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've read. And to offer up. We have the expression giving in. You give in to someone. And it's, you know, it's a little bit depressing that you're giving in to someone. But then again, they have the word giving in it. So maybe there's a deeper and wonderful way of giving in. On the freeway, sometimes I like to give way to people. Someone's coming, you know, wants to merge into my lane. And, you know, I probably have the right to be there. I probably, you know, it looks safe and, you know, and I have the right. And it took a long time to get into that lane. And now someone, once it gets in front of me, they're coming off, getting onto the freeway. You know, I could, you know, just kind of like insist that I get my way and let them kind of deal with the shoulder of the road. But I like, what I like to do is give way. Here, you can have it, please. Sort of give way, give in, give up. I don't know. I don't know if there's other giving words. Give attention. That's not giving up, though. But I like the expression giving attention. But to let go. So what can we relinquish here? Where it's this, where it's a healthy, wonderful place to take a stand. Where do we relinquish? Not so that we're diminished, but so we're somehow, we become bigger or more alive or more present, or life feels more worth living than being closed in and held down and holding on to something. What are we holding on to? What are we holding on to? What are we clinging to when we feel socially awkward with other people? It's remarkable that, and sometimes offensive, this Buddhist idea that, I think it's Buddhist, other people can say it too, that, you know, certainly there's a lot of attachment when there's conceit of being special. But these Buddhists say that there's going to be just as much conceit in being shy. That's kind of like, what? Shy people, aren't they? That's because they don't have much self, or they're kind of like, but there's still a concern with the self there. Where is it appropriate to let go of self-concern? Because the self-concern we have is limiting us. And certainly shyness can be limiting, but so can conceits of grandeur, that I'm special. Even if people agree with you, and so it feels pretty good, it actually limits ourselves a lot. It actually becomes a narrower world to live in. And to let go of conceit. Wow, what a great thing. And so what can we, what to take a stand on relinquishment? And let it be a kind of generosity. What would it look like if there's a benefits, a form of wealth or happiness that comes from relinquishment, to relinquish out of a place of abundance, or to relinquish, to tap into the sense of inner abundance that's not dependent on material goods or status or all kinds of things. And that's one of the great possibilities of meditation practice, is to discover in the simplicity of meditation, or to awaken a feeling of inner abundance that comes with that freedom, that comes from a fullness, that comes from no longer limiting ourselves with fear and all the different things we can limit ourselves with. And to both feel like relinquishment is almost like an offering of that abundance outwards. It's not a giving something up, it's a gain. I'm fond of the idea that I think some people, when they think of letting go, they think it means we're going to drop something. And in the teachings of the Buddha, as far as my reading has been, I think it's rare, if ever, he talks about letting go of anything. But he just talks about letting go of the clinging. And if you hold something and you let go of the clinging to it, you might still be holding it. If you respect everything, you don't let drop things. You hold it. And it was what's with this gesture now, this is a gesture of generosity, like here, or safety or something here. And then we can use our wisdom to know whether it should be given to someone or put down or do something. But to let go, so with this movement, with the palm of the hand facing upwards and just holding the whatever's there, rather than dropping something, which maybe is not so healthy, but this, then we can put things down if we need to. So to take a stand in relinquishment that's generous, that releases frees a certain generosity that both comes from abundance and provides a sense of abundance. And then the fourth resolve is the resolve of peace. And there is a really good time, excellent time, to be resolved on peace. Really good. There's a particular circumstance where it's really a good thing to do. The best time to resolve on peace is when it's better than the alternative. And how often do you think that occurs? That it's better than the alternative? If you have a better thing going on than peace, by all means, forget about the peace. But if the alternative isn't as good, you might want to consider it. I like the word ease rather than peace. Somehow the word peace is nice, but ease has for me a more embodied feeling. It's also how I act, how I live, what kind of process that go on inside. There's an ease to what happens. Whereas peace in my vocabulary feels a little static, but ease is more dynamic. You might not have that associations, But take a stand on peace. The alternative is to take a stand on war, on conflict, take a stand on being in opposition with reality. The reality is not cooperating. The weather is not good. It's raining. Doesn't reality understand that today was not the day to rain? I had important things to do. To be resolved on peace, one wouldn't then be angry at the clouds. One would say, well, where's the peace in this circumstance? Where do I find my peace? Where do I find ease with whatever is going on? It's not an acceptance of the situation. It's not condoning the situation. It's not becoming passive in the situation. But it is operating from a place of being peaceful, being at ease, being calm perhaps, tranquil, a certain tranquility, in engaging and doing the things maybe that we have to do. There are times in my life when I was younger, I was quick to be alarmed by situations. Like, we got to do something. So like I would call 911. I did a few times. Like, there's something terrible going on. We have to call 911. And then after a few minutes later, I think was calmed down. I looked at the situation. I said, there's not a problem here. So I hope that never happened to any of you. But the ability to be peaceful or calm lets us see the situation clearly. I haven't had this situation, but I have a lot of friends who had dangerous things happen to them. And because they stayed calm, there was some creative thinking that arose for them in the moment to take care of the dangerous situation at the time. One person I know was being held up in San Francisco by some teenagers or something. And it looked like a dangerous situation. And so the person suddenly found himself saying, you're no Christian. What would your mother think? And that kind of just stunned them a little bit, and then he ran away. He had a little moment there that somehow got them off guard. So I don't recommend that strategy particularly, but something in him knew as a strategy, but something inside of him knew that was to do that. And so this creativity or this intuition or this kind of understanding the situation well when we're peaceful, that we aren't if we're anxious. So someone might ask you, where do you come from? And conventionally they might say, where were you born, or where did you grow up, or where did you live last, or where do you live now? But if you want to say what's maybe where you're most coming from, if you're resolved on these, you can say, oh, I come from I come from the resolve on wisdom, truth, relinquishment, and peace. They might even ask you, who are you? Oh, you might say truthfully, the thing that seems more true than anything else, it's not what they're asking for, but it might be more true as an answer that you might say to them, oh, I'm the resolve on wisdom, on truth, on relinquishment, on peace. So these things can be that central that you could answer that way. But chances are, if you did, you'd annoy some of the people you say. So you probably shouldn't do it that easily. But there might be some people. Seems appropriate. They might appreciate it. They might be inspired. Because it's unusual in this life to have people who live on really root their lives on beautiful values. Beautiful, inspiring values. And I think that's what Buddhism is recommending and pointing to. It's not just a life of meditation, a life of stress reduction, a life of being calm, but it's a life that's really rooted or centered on some inspiring values and possibilities. And these four resolves can be seen as part of that. And then when you have these experiences or where the self seems to dissolve or where it seems like meaning is not found anywhere or disoriented from kind of having let go really deeply, then these provide a foundation to hold you. These provide a place to stand, and it's okay. It's okay because I'm committed to wisdom, truth, letting go, generosity, peace. And what a great place to come from. What a great place to be resolved. What a great place to base one's life on. Especially if you can understand how these four resolves, how healthy they are, how they really bring forth a kind of delightful spiritual health to ourselves and the world around us. So four resolves. If you have better resolves, great. And if these four resolves are the better alternative for you, you might want to consider them until you find something better. They're pretty good. You're not going to go wrong with them. So thank you. Those are my thoughts. We have a little bit of time, if maybe take 5 minutes or so, if any of you want to ask a question or a comment or to say something about any of this, you're welcome. Lovely to hear your voice a little bit now. Kind of, I feel it's very special to be together. Yes, and maybe also say your name when you start.
Hello, Ryan is my name.
Uh-huh.
I think what resonated for me most of what you're talking about was about truth. And I thought it was an interesting contrast that you said, you know, kind of this objective truth, like the you know, that there's a blue piece of tape on the floor, that wasn't as meaningful a truth as this kind of subjective aspect of your experience. Like it was like the kind of feeling apprehensive about what you're saying, like that's not like a, you know, kind of an objective, like objectively verifiable truth, but you know, that it's almost like an opinion. Yeah. You know, from like, I think from maybe our more standard way of looking at things, those kinds of things you're talking about are like the less important, you know, facts. And so just, you know, the fact that you're kind of calling attention to the fact that there's this like aspect of our inner experience, that is not even really a fact, or, you know, it's just a kind of an aspect of our feeling tone or the way we're relating. That's like the kind of the most fundamental truth. Yeah, like yeah. I just thought that was really, really interesting. So thanks for saying that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that's very important what you're saying. And the distinction you made between facts and truth is very important. And I think I like to think of truths as being aspects of the heart. So like lying about something is an aspect of the heart. Something worse. There is. It's kind of an illness of the heart. And it, you know, some people lie a lot, and you might say that in a way that's factual. But you might also, someone might recognize, I really spent my life lying. I lived a lie. Boy, I wish I knew that truth before. It's not just a fact then, it changes them in some deep way. So in India, the Mahatma Gandhi coined this term. It's the Sanskrit word is satyagraha, and some people have translated it as the power of truth. Some people it's like the adhering to the truth. So anyway, that's beautiful. You said that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Well, thank you for being here, and I hope to see you again sometime.